Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Brooke is coming to us from hot from Michigan.
Yeah, this week. We are here. It is, I took a picture. It's a very insidery in the service industry photo, but we went out for dinner last night and we had a server who did the, you know, knows how to write his name upside down with a black crayon on the piece of, you know, pull out construction paper on top of the table. And I was like, I have not seen that in a hot minute. That is very like Michigan trying to be fancy, you know, where he's like, hey, my name is David, as he writes it upside down. And I had to take a photo because it tickles me. It tickles my funny bone.
That gives me like a real first day of school feels.
It was
like
it
Mr.
Was
really David.
If anyone's ever seen that and been like, so are you married, David? Because
are they like, oh, banquet captain, my captain?
You fell upside down.
Oh yeah. So and then to add to the fantastically Michigan experience too, of like my family and everyone, all of us trying to be elevated because we have been around the block a little bit. We're not just, you know, Midwesterners through and through, but I learned from my mom that you can decant a $7 bottle of Pontificus like shitty Grenache Syrah from Trader Joe's. She's like, go pick up a bunch of bottles of those. Your father and I decant it. And so nice. I'm drinking decanted Trader Joe's wine as I speak to you all.
Are you like, Mom, I decant with this. I can't even decant with this.
I just decant right now.
Well, you guys, welcome to Sidework Podcast. I am your host, Andrea Wallace.
I'm your other host, Brooke Van Poplin.
And you guys joining us today from LA, a friend of mine for years. So excited to have her on the podcast. We've got Sita Zimmer with us today. Hi, Sita.
Oh, howdy.
How's things? How's life?
It's going well. I currently am in the midst of a very busy pre-holiday season. So I am taking care of myself and eating out and ordering from Caviar as much as I want.
There we go. You said those like magic words where it's just like, oh God, it is that time of year. It's pre-holiday nonsense time. And do tell, why do the holidays get really busy for you?
So I run an online Instagram live sale crystal shop. And
oh yes, yes. Okay.
It is, you know, a great time for everybody that is a huge rock nerd like myself to gift all their friends rocks to get mm-hmm. them on the rock and roll train.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great. And the best business name I've ever heard, which is Hippie QVC.
Which stands for Quest Vision Crystals, but of course is a nod to home shopping because yes. All Instagram live shopping is home shopping. Network.
It is, you know, okay, that immediately brings up two very specific points. Instagram has had so many iterations of like what it has been in my life for 12 years, which is also like, Jesus Christ, I've had this app has been in control of me for 12 years or whatever. But it was just like, look, I'm sharing photos and being artistic and staying away from the drama on Facebook. You know, then it was like, oh, what's a selfie? Then it was like, I should promote all my shows. Now it's just online shopping.
Yeah,
I'm on Instagram to buy blouses from Australia, I guess.
100%.
Which is amazing for you.
Yeah, during the pandemic, it was one of the things that really, the community was what sustained my sort of mental health, basically. It was one of the best places to go and at least feel like a bunch of people who love crystals, rocks, minerals, geology, all got to hang out together and chat twice a week. And then on top of it, it was also a great way to have a business during a absolutely unprecedented and disastrous time in our lives.
It was your, as this word we've used a million times on this podcast during the past 18 months, your big pivot.
Pivot. You know? Mm-hmm. I knew what was coming. Can I also add to this too? It's just a funny, like, fold it all in back home with parents. It used to be my job because my mom still does. It just has phases, has a definitely a shopping addiction. So now it's online, but it used to be QVC. And my job was to run interference and get home early to take the box off the porch and hide it in the upstairs closet so my dad wouldn't get on her case about all the online or the TV shopping she was doing on QVC.
Wow.
So.
Accessories for accessories.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. That's great. And so, Sita, we will dive in. We will hear you a little bit more in depth, but let's cover a little top of show first. Brooke, this is our 150th episode that we have released.
Okay, I'm going to do a manual air horn.
I'm like, I'm just going to grab the old Buka bell.
There we go.
I would hit it 150 times, but everybody would unsubscribe. but wow, I was like, holy shit, girl. We've shown up to this shift together 150 times.
It's pretty cool. I do have to say we are, Sita, we are almost officially 3 years in because when you do the math, it's going to be a little bit over 150 episodes, which equals wow. showing up every Friday for this stuff. But it feels, in many ways, I will say in this, you know, where I fell out of caring about stand-up as much and had phases where I really 100% had no control over my career, this podcast with you, Andrea, has been a constant, and I appreciate you, and I love you.
I appreciate and love you, too. I agree. You know, the fact that we would, like, think about how much we've gone through together, like, what the world has gone through, and we kept doing this, like, on the constant, has only made us stronger. And I hope, you know, and we know our listeners love us and we love them. So it's just, I don't know. I got a lot of feels for you today, girl.
Me too. Happy 150th.
Happy 150th.
Happy anniversary, guys. I'm really honored to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, again, like you're saying, kismet, it's all good. Welcome to the 150th season.
All right,
and
well, let's keep
150 more, you guys.
I know,
yeah, I right? Oh my God, that'd be like the longest serving job we've ever had. when we get to 300,
that's like doing a double for a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump into some headlines. First headline today out of Eater. We love Eater, you guys. So turns out, and I feel like we haven't really like dived into like a super crazy political headline in a minute, but we all know that everybody is still understaffed. We know nobody wants to go back to work. So this article is saying essentially companies are starting to rethink, right? Like how they move and better the business from a server point of view, from a worker point of view.
Which is like...
blowing my fucking mind. So there's a GoFundMe for a pop-up, a community-driven tasting menu restaurant called Hags that is in New York. And their vision, they're saying, don't be surprised if you were to come in and see our staff sitting down. You know, they think front of house should be able to sit. I think that, and we've never really talked about this either, is that like when you're sitting in a restaurant as a server, you're seen as being lazy. It's like not a good look to customers. And these guys are like, uh-uh, fuck all that. Like you're on your feet for hours. Even if you're working a double, if you're in the kitchen all day, just grueling and horrible, horrible conditions on your body.
And I think we all know that there's just like such a big difference between like if you're actually, you know, when you're in the thick of it, you're moving, you're doing your thing. it's better just fluid motion for your whole body. But when you are standing for the sake of standing to look like you respect the people who walk in the door and you respect the nature of the job, it's like, that is just a myth that we made up that we, you know, it's like, we made the rule. Let's break the rule. Cause this is so fucking stupid.
Yeah. The whole, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen line is bye bye guys.
Well, and the fact that you mentioned that, like, I didn't know, it never occurred to restaurants that they could put really good AC systems in the kitchen so that their back of house and chefs weren't keeling over from heat exhaustion.
That is a number one absolute top priority on a lot of these bigger business, especially a lot of, like, you know, restaurant groups that are adopting this. And it is also actually going to be a federal law, an OSHA law passed down by Biden, that heat exhaustion for workers is now going to be against the law, more or less. So God. People going in, I know, what the fuck, you know, gone are the days. Can you imagine, like, your line cooks, like, not sweating everywhere and actually being, like, pelted with nice cooling air? I think it would really lighten the mood on a Friday night.
There might be a lot less emotional and physical abuse coming from back of house, you know, because they're so overheated and not thinking correct, on top of already being, you know, malignant humans in society. But, you know, whatever.
Even going, you know, as far as, like, a company called Kindred in North Carolina, it's taken the time to rethink, like, service stations and making them less cramped and more efficient. Panda Express, which if you've been to a Panda Express, you know that, like, people are cooking in huge walks all the time behind the line. They're going to rethink on, like, less heavy lifting and, like, more efficient cooking and everything being a little bit more close together so people aren't completely straining their bodies.
Isn't there some sort of, like, awareness of that when people are just, like, miserable, that in some way transfers into the food that you eat? And when people are, like, filled with comfort, joy, and peace, that in its own way, like, your food doesn't get better because somebody is yelling at the top of their lungs to, like, take their tweezers and make the most beautiful curly cue of radish you've ever seen. It's like, didn't we all see for, like, Water for Chocolate? Like,
yes.
You gotta put that in your food. And I think that this elevated sense of anxiety within a kitchen doesn't create the passion. I think the passion comes from focus, and focus can only be attained with a certain level of comfort and decency in the space around you.
Absolutely. I think it's just one more, like, we have to rebuild so much. Like, everything is so broken. I hope this is just the first of many attempts to listen to your workers, assess the situation, make their working conditions better. I mean, it's a really good step in the right direction. So this article is very, very fun to read.
Yeah. And again, we're going to see it implemented in only a few places. It will be a long time. I mean, at the very least, you know, it can be like an OSHA regulation, at least for the heat exhaustion. So, like, there is that protection. It's hopeful. Again, like, not to be, you know, the devil's advocate or just maybe the realist in this sense of the word, is just that, like, restaurants are so under the radar with everything that they get away with. So it's gotta, you know.
And that's really what it is. Like, everything's right. So illegal all the time.
Right. Like, right. I know. It's like to watch the restaurant industry suddenly really get above board, I think, is catching the eyes and ears of regular citizens who've never participated in this line of work, going like, I'm sorry, what happens at the restaurant? You know, like, you do what under what conditions? That's nuts. So I mean, hoping that there'd be more of an outcry and outrage, yes, about these working conditions. And,
I mean, just as much as, like, owners not wanting to have floor mats for fatigue mats under the feet of their workers because they're unsightly. Like, this is the kind of shit that's being pointed out in these, you know?
Well, and it's funny because that sounds like it's coming from, like, basically the opinion of a fancier restaurant, you know what I'm saying, which is like, oh, well, you're supposed to be this elevated experience, and yet you're like, I don't want you know, I don't want fatigue mats back here because, oh God, they just clash with the decor. It's like, who's even back there? It's so that your employees can go home with some semblance of a spine, you know, still in place.
I know. And not like slip on like a down a weird drain and like break their ankle, which is very real behind the line. So more of this. Happy to have it.
That's cool. You know, and I looked at the article too, and I was like, illustrated by Carolyn Feigl. I was like, that is my ex-boyfriend's new, I guess their relationship's longer than ours was at this point. But my ex is a really talented illustrator. He's been dating now for at least 3 or 4 years, and equally, if not more talented illustrator. And she did all the beautiful art for this article.
That is so fun. That is great. I know.
For your safety, please remain seated.
Next article. Something we've already talked about is robots taking jobs over in the service industry, Sita. Specifically, there's a company in Pasadena we've talked about that has a machine called Flippy that basically fries, flips burgers, costs about $2 an hour, you know, which is much less than an actual human being costs to get paid hourly. So new hot on the scene, we've got a robot, a server.
Yeah, so move over robot back of house. The robot front of house is already here. They're on, what is it called, hot schedules or whatever. They're fighting with each other, trying to swap shifts.
Yeah, Servy is the name of robot.
Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in?
Exactly.
That's so funny. So Servy is this robot's name. Costs about $1,000 a month. Okay. So a human server would make between $25,000 to $31,000 annually, while a Servy's annual cost, including installation and support, all plug in and plug outs included, $12,000 a year. Okay. The robot delivers food from the kitchen to the table. To the table, navigating with lasers and sensors.
Like I said, it's a Roomba bringing you your food.
Yeah. So here's where it starts to be like, okay, I could get behind this. Okay, so because the robots allow wait staff to spend more time talking to customers and serve more tables, tips have surged using these. So I think they're more of a robot food runner than an actual, right, a back waiter, if you will.
Yes.
And many eateries are getting them because they're understaffed, and they also clean bathrooms and do floors, fry food, and even make cocktails.
I do not think that the fucking night porter bathroom cleaner gets programmed to also touch the food line during the same shift. Hope to God.
He like short circuits, comes out with his mop and your burger. And he's just like, thanks,
a toilet plunger. And
don't you need anything else? Just like dripping mop water on everyone.
Do you need anything else? You want some more? What a weird world we live in. The part that was like, oh, you mean you have the robot runs the food and the robot cleans the bathroom? I'm fucking in. Bring me the robot. I'll take those tips. Like that part, I have love for. But
he can deal. We should program the robot to deal with hostile customers.
Right.
That's a good use for it. So just yell at the robot. And
I think, yeah, if you get the robot to look like a Squid Game robot, you know, at the that plays the you know, red light, green light, you know, and you're like, whoa, 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 okay, you know what, never mind, that wasn't a big deal. Like, you see the eyes lock in on you and you're like, I think this robot might be a sniper.
Maybe you could, like, if you have like a bad table, you could like program the robot to like crop dust your tables or some, trying to think of something totally non offensive and non violent and not like inducing drugs. But yes. I think just good old robot fart drive by might be a good idea.
Or it just dials Spectrum and puts the table on hold.
Yeah. boy.
Brave new world.
We're here for more robots. I mean, I guess the future is now. We have no choice. We must bend to the robot knee.
We must.
I think I'm blowing a fuse. All right, Brooke, well, shall we get into some server
submitted
stories?
It's a server submitted story. You know, it's a slightly longer one and a real, once again, pivot from what we generally talk about, but I really like it because it's service industry, and let's get into it. Okay, I'm sure we can all relate heavily to this person. So, okay, hello. Oh my God, I love your podcast. I come from a long line of cleaners. Probably not robot cleaners, though. You know, this is an all-human line. Ancestry of human cleaners. Okay. My mother and aunt have 40 years combined house cleaning. My grandfather was a janitor for 45 years. Their stories are something else. It's not something we really talk about with others, just ourselves. We respect privacy. But this story has been in my brain recently, and I wanted to share. So I've been cleaning homes for 7 years now. I work for myself, and I love it. I work with headphones on. I zone out. Muscle memory takes over, and I enjoy the sweet sounds of the Sidework podcast. It's not serving food or drinks. I have done that in my past, poorly. Now I serve magic. I am providing an intimate service. Like, some clients are so wonderful. You are there as their families grow for big events, et cetera, and then other clients, not so much. And here's my worst client story. Ooh, she's coming clean. She says she does not spill the beans to the public about this shit. So this is good. All right. So she says, I was just starting out cleaning at the time. I've learned so much since this incident. I now trust my gut. The first red flag from this client was when they told me they made their original cleaning person cry when they accosted them for not cleaning kitchen cabinets well enough. Yeah, that's not probably something you want to come out of the gates with. Jesus Christ. Okay. Well, then I was accused of leaving red marks on walls from my vacuum. These marks were clearly marker put there by their child. Then it was an issue with not cleaning the dust well enough. The client explained that the dust buildup on her light bulbs made them smoke. It was just that bad. You know, now I clean them every 2 weeks. Like, what the fuck? I've never heard of that. Okay. The issue was that she owned 5 cats and 2 dogs plus an entire family in a small home. It is the pet human dander that was doing it, not my lack of cleaning. Did she want me coming weekly? Of course not. Client felt she was already paying me far too much and let me know it. Another red flag. Finally, this client was moving. The house was for sale, and I was so happy to let them go. I filled their time slot with another client and gave these new people a start date. Until then, I was to keep cleaning so the house looked good for open house showings. Ooh, baby, that is a real thing. When I was, as we all know, in the midst of my open house, it was like, it's like, just try not to live. Can everyone who's under this roof just try not to live?
Yeah,
this
you're place like, I've never to... used a squeegee so much in my life.
Ooh, baby. Yeah, so it is a thing. All right, so back to her. So out of the blue on a Sunday, my phone starts blowing up. It was the nightmare client. They're so excited to tell me, get this, that she had given my cleaning time slot to her neighbor whose husband had died that month. Her friends had pooled a year's worth of cleaning money to just give me in a lump sum of money to this woman for an entire year. She couldn't understand why I was so upset. I'll tell you why. Number one, I am not a servant. People don't own me. She couldn't just will me to another client. Like, this girl got gifted. Ugh, she thought it was a quote unquote nice surprise. She was so shocked to learn I had already filled her cleaning spot when the for sale sign hit that motherfucking front lawn. Two, she hadn't even asked her neighbor if she wanted cleaning. This was also a surprise. Having a private house cleaner is so intimate. Buying a one-time, you know, cleanup is one thing, but this was bi-weekly cleaning for a year without asking the neighbor and without asking me. Number three, I was not insured at the time, also working under the table. I was just a woman with a cleaning obsession and a crappy vacuum at that time. What would stop me from just taking the money and never showing up to work? It's so stupid to entrust that sort of thing to some fly-by-night person. Note, I'm now fully insured. We're all on the books above board now. Okay. So the client had arranged for all of her friends that had pooled the money to come for a coffee party and present the gift of me being a cleaner to the neighbor that afternoon. She thought she would be surprising me with this wonderful news. I had to tell her, no, 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 no. So this totally ruined her megalomaniacal plans. She completely flipped out. The friend group was on their way and I ruined everything. Then the guilt trip came for refusing to clean a bereaved woman's home. Jesus Christ. You can see why we're only doing one today. Okay. The client had referred me to three other clients, so this was also held over my head as well. She threatened she would demand that her referrals drop me as a cleaner. The audacity of her demands still make my head spin. Clients said that they were, quote unquote, concerned for my finances if she left me as a client, and that I should also watch my back and, quote unquote, good luck with your life because you're gonna need it. I told them, good luck with your move, then blocked their number and didn't speak of it to any other clients until years later when someone asked me about it. I took the high road. It's not easy to do until today, right? She took the high road until today. My husband returned the house keys to the mailbox that day. The client's referrals never left me. They never fired me. They later admitted that they were happy when this bitch moved away. Of course, right? They were also seeing red flags too, my friend. So I have never in my life felt so low when this happened. I legitimately care about my clients. I try my best every day to make things magic in their homes. I've saved marriages. I help depression. I help my elderly clients stay in their home. I will drop everything if there is a death or a holiday or if guests are suddenly coming. I will take care of your pets when you are on a vacation. I am there for you if you are my client. And to be shat upon by someone who had thought so lowly of me at the time that I cared so much for them was very crushing. So many years later, I now have a medium to tell my nightmare client story. Yay, it's us. I wonder if she's listening. By the way, bitch, I'm doing great. That bitch was thrown in on my behalf, but... This girl takes the high road. That bitch was low road Van Poppelin over here. So I have a group of regular clients I see on rotation that I care deeply for, and they care for and respect me as well. So always trust your gut and know that if you try your very best, you are always worth top dollar. Don't let people push you around. You are in control. Thanks again for letting me share and ramble on, Heather.
Wow.
Right? I've been sitting on that for a little bit because, you know, we were in spooky season for a while and I was like, this is its own thing, right?
It's absolutely its own thing. I think that, you know, when we have these bigger stories, I try to like hold my applause till the end in a way. But just like the faces that Sita and I were making while you were reading that where it was insane. Fucking fuck people.
Like, have you watched any episodes of Made on Netflix?
I have not yet.
I've watched two and you're just like, oof, I'm getting some major feels from this line of work.
But, you know, doing cleaning someone's home and getting mm-hmm. so personal with them, it's just another level of service, right? Absolutely. It is on par with any other service job out there. And like, it is, we all know, the three of us, what it's like to care so much and be so passionate about what you do. And it's hard, like even as a server, as a bartender, I did it even more so as an esthetician, because like I also provide magic in my opinion, you know, like
look at our faces, Sita, yeah, right? She does do magic.
We're all in the magic business. And like for someone to fucking darken that shit is way too much. So bye. I'm glad she's out of your life. I'm glad she's gone.
The expectation of this woman, as if her time is in some way the woman whose house it was, more important, valuable, and that this woman is just an extension of how she views time and how she wants to spend it. And then this hero complex of, oh, let me come in and save you since you're losing my account and bestow another account upon you to make myself feel so good about what's happening. It's almost like the narcissistic mother trope that like shoves the daughter into some sort of presentational situation. She's like, I'm gonna gift you with cleaning up this coffee tea party. Like it's wild. It's completely just off.
It's pretty fucking Gone with the Wind, if you ask me. Yeah, like it's, you know,
it's kind of out of the spectrum of reality of what is going on with anyone else's life.
Right. And it's on the spectrum of the many, many people in this world who don't understand or respect what the job entails, and that you are not to just be, you know, bought, sold, and or gifted without any consent, you know? So it's a view that she holds about what we do or have done as workers.
I have a cleaning lady. So the house I currently live in was my friend's house prior, and I'm very good friends with her. And when the woman was transferring the lease to me, she came to me and she said, you know, if you want, I can keep coming. And since I know the house and I have a key and all that stuff. And I said, yeah, of course. And we've built a really strong friendship over the years, and her business has grown and expanded, and she's hired more clients. And during the pandemic, people were paying her even though she wasn't showing up at their house.
Yeah.
And right at the end of the pandemic, she came to me and she said, Sita, can I show you this text message? I have a client who paid me 3 times over the pandemic, and he's now asking for the return of me coming back and cleaning his house 3 times for free. And part of my like soul sunk, because I was like, don't you dare like block that man's number, because you, one, should just be raising your prices altogether, but two, like, he was doing that under the guise of, this is a work, we're all in a hard time. And he never said like, you're going to pay me this money back. Like he just, you know, he was gifting it to her. Like all of us were.
Appreciation. My brother is a dog walker, and he had clients keep him on even though they were all working from home, because they're like, this is none of our faults, you know, and we're potentially going to destroy this man's livelihood, which again, none of our faults, you know,
just the expectation that gets put on, you know, women of color and women who work in the cleaning industry. Like, you know, you provide for me, you give me a service, and I also just sort of treat you like property, which is, you know, or even like some sort of old module of like the help comes with the house, like it's freaking Rebecca. What was that?
Yeah.
Hot Hitchcock movie. Like, this is Danvers comes with the house.
Yeah. Danvers. I mean, it's very much like, yeah, sorry. You know, unless this is a person who like you have living, you're paying for them to have, you know, a guest house, their own quarters, like where it's like, this is their annual income and they're living like, and they are dedicated to you and you, everyone else is a fucking independent contractor, doing their own thing. And yeah, like what the fuck? You have no claim to them other than your little time slot. That's it. That's where it starts and ends. And it can be a beautiful thing, or it can be weird and abusive, and you can like stunt on them like a fucking weird, sadistic.
This lady, yeah, especially if her referral clients were like, oh, we're so glad she's gone, was probably like the neighborhood terror. And she probably thought everybody fucking owed her something, especially for her to be like, for people that like out of the gates be like, this is what we did to our old, our old housekeeper. It's just, it's fucking sadistic, you know, like.
But you know what? And good for her. She's feels free enough and confident enough and good enough to share it, to air it. She still even shared it in a classy way. And she's doing great. Her business sounds like it's going well.
Yeah. Heather, thank you so much for sharing. You guys, if you have any stories, of course, inspired by any service industry, I think we're getting to that point, you know, where we can all just relate so much to each other. Please send them our way. Sideworkpod@gmail.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, you guys, let's dive into the topic of the day. We, of course, have been talking to Sita about Hibby QVC and like her amazing crystal business. But like, let's get into it right away, since we've kind of already covered that. Like your service industry, your restaurant, your catering. You and I have, when I first met you, you were thick in the cater waiter biz.
Knee deep.
So I have to ask, did you two meet here in LA or in Chicago?
No, we actually did meet. Sita is a client of mine at Being in LA. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I assumed, but I didn't know if she became a client because she knew you from other jobs, or then because she was a client, then you, as it happens, all the different ways with Andrea, wonderful friendships blossom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So actually I was thinking about it when I was thinking about, you know, okay, I'm going to come on. What was my first experience working, serving food to people? And it was actually, do you guys know the Odyssey Theater in West LA? They have a snack bar that operates during intermission.
Okay.
It's a coffee and snack bar. And that was actually the first time that I ever had to, you know, service people by bringing them treats.
How old were you?
I was just out of CalArts. So I was like maybe 20, 21. I left CalArts before graduating. And it seemed a natural transition to like work front of house at a theater. They have three theaters there, if anyone is familiar with a specific place, but they're the way that they don't hire people to be bussers, ushers, snack bar patrons. They only hire one house manager, which was me. And then everybody else are people who all got like DUIs and needed to do community service. So one of their options, deadass, for community service was to work at a theater. And a lot of people took that option because it was indoors and it was like relatively easy. You're just like passing out programs. But I mean, some people that would show up were like heavy drinkers, or they had like an addiction issue, and so they would show up like either under the influence, and it would just be sort of like a modge podge of people. And I would have their record because I would have to sign off on it, then they would have to show their whatever officer that they had done that many hours. And some people had like 400 hours, like one guy like had one.
What'd you do?
Entering. Like, and so all I had to train them on the spot, like this is how you use a cappuccino machine. And I had to do it every single time. And of course there were repeat people, but sometimes someone only had 5 hours. And so be like, this is how you take the cash. This is how you serve a lemon bar. Don't forget to give them a napkin. That was the craziest job of my life.
So that's almost like you immediately went in and like were a banquet captain. And this is you coming out of CalArts, obviously like interested in acting, and you hanging on to these service jobs because they cater to you, pun intended, and your want to be an actor, be a working actor.
Yes. At the time, like I was a child actor in New York, and it was a really like sort of seamless transition to begin acting in LA. My manager had moved out a year before me, and I was working all throughout like elementary school and high school in film and TV and commercials and modeling. And so it was just like super quick transition to, but I did want to go to school. I gave school a try. It wasn't for me. So I decided to leave and just start working. And so I worked nights. Like I think I worked Friday and Saturday nights. And sometimes I would work one matinee on Sunday. And, you know, I think my thought process was, at least you're at the theater, but it was.
You're so theater adjacent. Oh, I know. Totally. It was, know. It was like I know that feeling.
kick in the face of the people who sort of inhabit the Los Angeles culture. Because I had people that were like investment bankers that had gotten their second DUI and needed to do, you know, 200 hours on top of their fines and on top of whatever was going on. And then I had people that were like, it should probably have been in clinics, but were serving lemon bars to like the midnight show of the importance of being earnest. Like,
what the f-
yeah,
that's a lot.
The theater made some really strong choices. The 11 p.m. shows of like classical stage productions where everyone just falls asleep. It's like, why are we doing this? Like, why is this like not the opposite of Rocky Horror?
Right. It's like, and then while everyone else falls asleep in the theater, there's the one dude who's like, time to wanky wanky. I love this late. Yeah.
Gross.
Let's watch so, a doll's house at 1 a.m.
Did you hop into catering pretty quickly after that, would you say?
Yeah. No. So that, well, yes and no. So I worked rigorously from the age of like all young chicks. It sounds even terrible saying like young chicks, but like just sort of like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, like women in Hollywood who were between the ages of like 20 and 26, you're like blood in the water, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was working to an extent that I didn't have to have a side job. And then the second 27 hit, it was like, dun, dun, dun. Oh. Like, you no more high school, no more like, that demo was gone.
Yeah, for sure. You can't play a teenager anymore. You can't play, yeah.
So, and then the only thing that was becoming, I wasn't yet the young mom. So
ooh, yeah,
it was some sort of weird phase. And I was like, oh my God, a new job. So I went to Craigslist and I found a job to cater at the Wilshire Ebel, which is like, I'm laughing because if there's anyone who's listening who like ever had to do that, they would just be like, oh my God, what a crazy situation, because the kitchen staff were all ex-convicts who needed a transitory, like non-violent offenses, who needed like a transition job because this place was just really cheap for some reason. So they were all under this chef. And then all of the wait staff were like actor/models who had like the work ethic of what you would think an actor/model has the work ethic of. Like, it was,
right.
You know, they would go from like being on set all day and people handing them food and catering to them to like trying to lift these drink carts and set up bars and dealing with the public. And it was just a mess. Like, the whole staff was just like drunk all the time. Like, we were paid like nothing. We were paid like $11 an hour. We were never tipped. It was a disaster. And then you would walk in the kitchen and it was like JoJo and like Dicey from the just got out of state, and they're cool, but you know, they're going through whatever they're going through as well. You know, like they're going through just being out, like being out of the system. It was just crazy.
Wow. I'm totally on the website right now. Yeah. I had to look it up because I think I have only lived in LA. I am going on my almost 6-year birthday, which is kind of mind blowing. That's crazy to me. But I know that, you know, you've seen it like in all of its glory for longer than 6 years. Right. And it's just like, I think I've been here, and I absolutely, this is where I have a story where the catering staff, because I was at some sort of goofy premiere party that True TV paid for. And I've tried to the best of my ability, explain this cater waiter bartender who, it wasn't even that like he didn't know how to make a drink. He was like, I'm sorry, can you tell me what a glass is? I'm a little unclear what a glass, you call this ice? This is, and then it goes in the, what is this again? Like, it was, my old roommate, I took him as my date, and we were like, what the fuck? Like, how many tabs of acid did this dude do? But it wasn't even that he was high. He was like, I'm so out of my element right now, putting ice in a glass. Because they didn't tell me I was going to have to do this.
Was like, hop on the bar, Sam. Sam was just like, okay.
Like, this is like really coming together. This is all making sense to me now.
We had like, in terms of just like tomfoolery that went on, like there are the guy that was in charge of all the wait staff, he would never pay you for doubles. You would never get overtime. He
had all the highly illegal shit we're talking about.
So he would just like forget to pay staff. Paychecks would be weeks late. You know, he would unfairly give people raises and not other people, sort of based on how hot he thought you were, was the spectrum. That was the game. And then on top of it, like, I think it was just an environment where a bunch of people who sort of just needed a little bit of cash got flung together and realized like they just didn't care about your wedding or your banquet or your True TV premiere. Like collectively the staff was just like, we care enough to like sometimes pick up a glass, but we don't care enough to like, if you ask us for something, like that was a thing. Like if you would ask someone, you would have to ask five people and maybe someone would do it. Bare minimum, because then we all found out what we were getting billed at. And, you know, for weddings, we were getting billed at like $38 to $42 a person. And we were all getting paid, you know, $11, $12 an hour.
Wow.
So everyone just, who like, where's the level like of effort beyond like personal morals?
That's fucking crazy. They were the embodiment of like, decant even right now. Yeah.
I just see you guys, you're like entrees haven't even gone down and you're like, everybody's like on their fourth smoke break. You know what I mean? Oh,
100%. When we had to do ballet service, that was another thing. We would rehearse several times. And, you know, ballet service is when everyone goes out in a line and you drop with your left first, then you move over past the plate to your left hand and you drop again and you do it coordinated. We would run through this. Like, I've never seen anything. It like opening night of Wicked, we would run through this over and over and over again. Like, we've got to get the lift.
Guys,
kickball
change. Kickball change. And then we drop the entree to the left.
When I say half the staff would be out doing ballet service to half the table, someone would move to another table. The chicken would be the fish. The fish would be the veg. No one, forget it. Your wedding is jacked.
Oh my God.
I'm in awe that like you kept showing up and like didn't get fired, and the not giving a fuck was just like, it is what it is. This is a one-off. These fuckers can complain all they want. We're the Wilshire E-Bell Theater.
I think at one point I was like, I would see stuff happen and I had made friends with a lot of the staff and I'd be like, if we don't do this, it's never going to get done. So like, let's just like power hard and bust for like an hour, like our life depended on it. And things, I mean, it would get done at the end of the night. Like it all happened somehow.
I mean, that's when you know you're like in the trenches and you're like, these are my buddies, like in my, you know, like you're, it's a war almost, right? And if you don't have each other, who do you have? You just have to like get through it.
And I think we all like loved each other's company and it was just like absolute hilarity, you know, hearing about people's casting stories and people's days, and everyone was just coming from, it, like Los Angeles is so many people, like all the prettiest kids in your high school, like fell into this staff. And like, we had this one guy, he was so beautiful. And like, you know, everyone, all the bridesmaids would want to dance with him. And all the older ladies that would come for luncheon would want to dance with him. And like, he never worked. He just sort of like walked around.
God, you guys, I finally started watching Party Down. And it's like, you're describing Party Down. It's fucking crazy.
Nothing exactly gets done. Like, yeah.
Absolutely. It was exactly like that.
And so,
We
had talked about a lot about you know, you kept catering and then getting to the point where you're basically catering like fancy, insane parties, right?
Yeah. So I leveled up after I had gotten like the experience and I was like, oh, I understand this. I found a company and a private chef simultaneously around like, you know, like 28, 29. And I started exclusively working for them and bartending for them. And these were much bigger, much more professional, air quote, events. So we were working Emmy and Oscar parties. Mm-hmm. We were working at mansions in the hills, you know, sort of that idyllic Hollywood life thing that you think of when you walk into a party and it's this like mid-century modern with the pool overlooking the hills, like that kind of stuff. And I was bartending at least four nights a week at events, especially during busy seasons. I was working all like holidays, New Year's, Christmas, all that stuff, just sort of trying to make some money. And, you know, that was, it was an interesting time in my life because like I developed like a pretty insane drinking problem. Like pretty quickly. I had worked as a beam girl, like a Jim Beam shot girl, or whatever.
Yeah.
You roll up to like bars on the coast, like from San Diego to San Francisco, just like, what? Like Jim Beam in the house. Like we had a wrapped vehicle. We had the outfits. Like it was a disaster. So yeah, like there it sort of started a little, but once I started bartending, because I was so unhappy in that environment, like it was such an intense environment. And I remember one time I was bartending a Netflix party and I had just shot a series for Vice TV with this girl, Rachel, who was on that Jessica hero show. I can't remember. She was like a superhero named Jessica.
Okay.
And so the other star and I.
Jessica Jones.
Oh, right. Yes.
So
Kristen Ritter.
Her co-star and her husband, it's written a show for Vice with that guy Patrick from that show Suits. And I had just shot like the second episode for that Vice TV show, and I had to show up at a bartending shift, but because it was Netflix, she was there, her husband was there, everybody who was working on that TV show is there, and I was just like, yo, what's going on right now? Like, what can I get you a like martini? Like, this is a very strange, surreal experience that I just left, you know, working with you, and it happens all the time. I know,
of course it does. I've 100% waited on my peers.
Right.
And after I had a big break, and then you're like, I'm not for money. So if I don't have jobs, I have to go back to the service.
Right. And like, I just felt like less than for some, you know, I felt unimportant. I felt all of these sort of like sad feelings that I couldn't have a career like them, or that it wasn't happening for me like it was happening for them. And so I would drink, and I would drink on shift, and it made the shifts go by faster.
That is true.
At one point it was like, oh, like something's really wrong. Like I'm leaving shifts really angry. I'm leaving feeling exhausted, exploited. I'm leaving feeling in a state of like comparison between me and the people whom I'm serving, because they are so wealthy and because they have so much excess. And, you know, more times than not, they're very unpleasant. Mm-hmm. They're not tipping, because a lot of celebrities don't think to carry cash.
Yeah, because they get everything for fucking free.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But you're like, that's how they stay real rich.
To carry cash. Mm-hmm. Chappelle and RuPaul.
Nice.
And I will pour them a glass of water, and they gave, like, they tip so handsomely. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God, this is some great press for Dave Chappelle right now. Yeah. Let's like break this off. Like, let's throw it out there and be like, we have good things to say about Dave Chappelle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was impressive to encounter that in the community, because it was like, again, 2 out of 100 celebrities would have.
Yeah. And like, not to be any which way, I've kind of, you know, surprise, surprise, probably people who come not from, you know, already baked in means, grandfathered in, privileged career already guaranteed for them. Of course, RuPaul and Dave Chappelle know what it's like to be on that rung of the ladder that you're on. And yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
Especially when you think of like Rue, like working for tips and drag clubs, like in the bars, you know what I mean? Like for years and years. So this is a good, I think, time to transition into, like, you know, you worked all these crazy parties, like, and then you like read tarot and you have this ability. So at some point in the game, especially in the world of Hollywood, where people like want to be told their fortune and their future and how things will work out for them, you transition from cater waiter to tarot reader at the same kinds of insane parties, right?
Right. So when I
thread the needle. Okay.
When I told the company, I think I have a drinking problem, I have to stop bartending for you, they stopped hiring me. They would throw me bones every now and again, but nothing like the 4 days a week I was working. And also ethically, I couldn't bartend anymore. And I talked about this, like, just in my own personal meditation practice, I felt like not everybody that came up to me had a drinking problem, but one in, you know, whatever the number is did. And I was helping service that habit. And at this point I started meditating more and I started trying to do the inner work that needed to get done to lead me to the reasons why I was choosing to take a substance instead of feel my feelings. Mm-hmm. And I went to India on a pilgrimage. So I'd quit drinking about a year and a half before that. And then I went to India on a pilgrimage. And I come from a long line of psychics on my mother's side of the family and professional ones. They worked as psychics, as mediums, and as tarot card readers. And I was gifted my first tarot set like when I turned like 16 years old. And I had always had it around. I had also sort of just had intuitive, you know, opinions, let's call them intuitive opinions. And I was sitting in Bodh Gaya under the Bodhi tree, and I had the thought that I should transition into reading cards for people and try to maneuver my way out of the catering industry, because it was going to put me directly in line with the substance that was causing me so many problems. And I think a lot too about what's called right livelihood in the ethics of Dhamma. And this is about not doing a job that can really harm other people. And mm-hmm. I was concerned that I was not only harming myself, but harming other people in what I was doing. So I decided to start reading tarot cards, and I got linked up with like a woman who hired tarot card readers for events. People just started catching wind. Like once I put it out on Instagram and put out a couple of videos of me explaining, because the tarot is like profoundly misunderstood. Like if anyone has TikTok right now and wants a lot of misinformation, they can find all the incorrect information they've ever wanted about the tarot on TikTok. And then they can go figure out the right information by the resource I love is trulyteachmetarot.org. So I started reading at parties, and that was a whole other animal in itself. I mean, people were speaking to me as if they had known me for years, and they were speaking to me like one would speak to a clinical psychologist in a 10-minute session in the middle of a Halloween party for Snapchat. It was unreal what people need to talk to people. I don't know who I don't know what's going on, but and I would be dressed sometimes as a gypsy, and they would come up to me and tell me so much. And I would just be like, oh my God, like, do you have a professional in your life? Like I am in an unregulated field. So I don't report things like abuse and
right.
It was unbelievable to see in a party atmosphere. I'm sure this happens to bartenders, and it did happen to me a little bit as a bartender, but nothing like being a tarot reader. And especially because a lot of the times I was hired as like jokey entertainment, not necessarily like realistic entertainment, but people would sit down and they would take it very seriously.
It's crazy to me that you shared your story about, you know, like how crushing almost it was to try and be a working actor and have it like thrown back in your face, and obviously the links it brought you to, you know, choose sobriety. But for the power shift, right? Like all of a sudden you're in this position where you hold all the power in the room.
Yeah. It's crazy. You're like, I used to stand over there where that person is currently standing, mixing your shitty little margarita. And I'm here now, and there's just like a whole world of just proof that people don't seek the right help that they need, you know? And I think tarot and sometimes a lot of mysticism where it deserves its own respect and its own space, but it's like, it's usually like this really weird gateway for people to be like, I have no one, like I'm surrounded by people who don't listen to me. Mm-hmm. Or like maybe I'm just even thinking of just the pylon of celebrity being like, everyone works for me and around me, but no one actually talks to me. I'm sure there's like a lot of bizarre detachment.
100%. I'll never forget. I was reading tarot cards at what, you know, those unique markets. They're like these mm-hmm. really cute Los Angeles markets. They're very curated, and a very, very famous model came up to me, and in 20 minutes, I felt, we still to this day like communicate, mm-hmm. not through tarot because I don't read anymore, but mm-hmm. it was as if, like, even though she was paying me and paying for a service, it was just as if like someone could just look at her and just listen and not have the expectation of like, you're so successful, you can do so many things for me, or I want your approval. And that was something that I kind of got down really fast, where I was just like, just sit and just hear what these people are saying and try to give them the advice that is gonna be the most helpful and that they're gonna be able to understand. Cause a lot of stuff is outside of people's awareness. The majority of the time it is. So you have to do it in sort of, you need to be intelligent about the way that you're dosing the information too, as a tarot card reader, which can be really problematic for, again, an unregulated field and eventually the reason why I left. But I, there were a lot of celebrities that it just, you know, no one's free of misery and suffering in this.
No, money is wonderful, but yeah.
And it's so clear. Having worked, you know, being the busser and having people just really treat me like shit, and then having the same woman come and sit across from me and just like back the truck up and dump, and also just have, again, no respect for, you know, the fact that there's another person sitting across from her that has to receive this information as well. Yeah. And I get it was like the job that I signed on to do. And I think eventually that's why I started like moving away from it and moving away from events in general. There's a level two of intoxication that people reach in the middle of the night and they stop hearing things. They're not anything that you're saying until you're like, what are we doing here? You know, like, are you having a tarot session or am I just entertaining you? And if I'm just entertaining you, then I can just tell you about like the cool history of tarot.
I had written down that you kind of went from one mind reader to another, like someone being like, didn't you know I needed more red wine, to them being like, aren't you supposed to tell me what my future husband looks like? Like, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And more than mind reading, I think one of the things I got really good at from my particular childhood and what happened to me was just watching people very closely and very carefully. I listen to the patterns in their voice and I can watch their body language almost subconsciously at this point. And it just, it's that INFJ life, man. It's that.
will you say, because I think I'm an EM here, say INFJ, baby.
INFJ, baby.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I meant like, you get what I'm saying. That was the dumbest thing I've ever said. Is it, fuck, what is it?
What do you mean? Oh, with what it's
the words
stands for. So the first one, has to do with introversion.
Yes.
So you have an I or an E at the beginning. And this just means that, you know, where you sort of harness your strength, if you will. And a lot of people can harness it from being around other people. But for me personally, it has to come, even though like I'm super extroverted right now. I have to be alone certain
periods. I have the same I at the beginning of my, I just forget what I am, but I think I'm almost like you. Like I need a lot of downtime, like the face mask has to go on, the deep, like lost in my head, not being bothered. And then I can,
shine.
Talk.
Yeah, can talk. Exactly. Yeah. And two, I don't know if anyone's listening because it is sort of like a crystal related episode. Like I also am what's called a human design reflector. And this is, if you've never heard of human design, it sort of combines a lot of different techniques of astrology and I Ching. It's interesting. I'm not 100% on board with it, but sure, why not? Like, why not just learn about something else? And the type is, it can tend to, and I can tend to absorb a lot of what's in the room. And so I make a really bad person to be in catering or bartending, or because I'm just taking everything sort of just like filtering through me and I'm seeing everything. And it's like, it gets too overwhelming.
Sure.
And eventually the tarot got really overwhelming. One of a really positive, I guess, fun situation is like when people have a laugh or when people, you know, I'm good at guessing, I guess. So people get really surprised in a humorous way that I predicted something. But then also too, sometimes it's a gateway to them being like, oh, I would like to know more about myself. And that serves everybody.
Absolutely.
The more you can know about yourself, the more you can service everyone around you. And if you want to be in the real service industry, you have to like get in.
You sure do. You sure as fuck got to get in there, which I have learned over the years. I want to say,
ooh, should we start a new like adjacent podcast with you called the self-service industry?
Yes,
the
self-service industry.
Yeah.
And you know, Hippie QVC, and I knew you before that, but seeing you and seeing this business take root and grow, is that while what you do with the crystals that you bring forth are some of the most beautiful pieces I've ever seen in my life, Brooke, they're the crystals in their most raw form. I mean, the beauty of it all is insane, but at the same time, it's very real. You're dealing in some of the most, again, most amazing crystals, but you don't take yourself seriously. You guys have so much fun with it, and you're silly, and like you get your nails done so beautifully to like show off your QVC crystals. So like
right here.
Yeah, that one's sick. That one's super sick.
Follow, subscribe.
She's holding up a piece of, if anyone knows their mineralogy, she was holding up a piece of what's called Apache chrysoprase, which is actually a combination of chrysoprase and lapis. There is turquoise in there. There's chrysocolla. There's malachite in there. It grows in Arizona. It's a native rock. We have great rocks in the U.S., specifically in the Dakotas. Believe it or not, in Arkansas, we've got some beautiful, beautiful specimens that come out of the United States. They rival specimens from all over the world. There's a little bit of a crystal competition going
all
on.
All the things that are happening in that one piece are like insane, right?
No, it's wild. It's wild. And it's not really like, it's not that common. So I try to go, you know, I grew up in New York City. I had parents in fashion. So I try to lead with the fashion forward of crystals, if you will. Like I try to find things that are obscure, avant-garde, artistically inspired. I grew up going to museums as very much part of regular practice was visiting places like the MoMA and visiting places like the new museum when it opened. But I think one of like a huge standout for me was walking into the Guggenheim as a child and marveling at just colors and sounds and all the things that were honored within this building. And I feel like minerals have a place in that. And that's why I got really attracted to working with the specimens, because they are in their own way artistic bits of and icons for people beyond what people attach to them metaphysically. It's earth art, like hands down.
It is. It's just raw. It's in its rawest form art that just it's we have such a detachment to, and I mean this, I'm not trying to even get fully on a completely different topic that we could go down but we're so detached from the natural world that people don't even understand that these are materials that are like what the fabric, you know, like just this whole like why do you deny climate change? Like you don't even understand, you know, and you're going, they probably deny it because it's like they really do like live in a Costco reality of just like it's and I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying it's crazy that nature also now seems like a weird privilege.
And they're robot, you know,
for
waiters.
People to experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brave new world that has such robots in it.
Well, I know.
We absolutely commend you for shifting to retail, which is the sister of the restaurant industry, if you will.
Yes, we do.
And doing both sides of it, you know. And I thought that to wrap up today, and of course, please come back anytime. We have so much more to talk about, I feel
like. I would love to hang in real life, too. Are you in Arizona? But you're LA-based. Was that
I live
in geotag?
Los Angeles, yeah.
Oh, perfect. Let's all do something.
Yeah, she is not too far from you. She's just over in Mount Washington, and you are in Glassell. So you guys are not that far from each other.
Okay. All right, neighbor friend, let's hang.
So I thought you could provide us with some crystals for the service industry, for an arsenal, if you will, a collection of protection, maybe abundance, maybe like, you know, of the crystals that would line up with what it takes to be a successful person in the service industry. So,
yeah, 100%. I get the assignment. So I'm just going to preface by saying that like my affinity lies in geology and like chemical structures and understanding formations. But
of course, I know a lot about lore and I know a lot about the metaphysical elements of crystals. So my opinion is a pretty common one that people should go towards what they're attracted to if they're going to slip it in their pocket or if they're going to, you know, wear it on them while working a difficult job or going through a difficult time. I, again, think of it as an external token or implement that reflects back to you the intention that is going into a space. So if you're a server working in a really hostile environment and you feel like you need a little bit of like self-care and self sort of, I don't know what it is, like that space between you and everything that's happening around you, that sort of buffer. And there's a crystal that you're looking for to achieve that. Pick one that maybe makes you feel loved and safe. So that way you're just reflecting, like, I could tell you like what kinds of stones are associated with that. With protection, people like to use tiger's eye, or they like to use what's called azurine, or they like to use obsidian.
Yeah.
A lot of the black ones, like ilvite, is another good one. But if you think about what's underneath the protection, you feel unsafe. And so what's making you feel unsafe? And it probably has something to do with boundary, or probably has something to do with like a negativity that's coming at you. And then there's a whole nother layer of crystal that could come out of that. You know, malachite has a very old classical meaning, and it has to do with like a sort of transformation and protection of the soul as it moves from space to space. If you ever have seen Anna Karenina, the movie with, what is her name? Keira Knightley. Mm-hmm. Her husband, Alexei, keeps their sort of sexual contraception in a malachite case. And the history of keeping things in malachite containers, containing things that need to be contained, transforming things when they need to be transformed, is an old, old historical trope, I guess.
So if you want to hold on to your wine key, keep it in a malachite keep container.
Keep it in a malachite case. Saying, right? Someone's going to steal it.
Because but... it's gonna interact with a lot of different spirits. Hello.
Malachite is beautiful, by the way. I love any green stone. I'm super attracted to, and that one is great. So what about weight mirrors? We all are susceptible to them. If you know the weight mirror, Sita.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having my very first one, and I couldn't believe I was dreaming about racking dishes and panic about at the Wilshire Ebell of all places. hanging on by a thread, that place. No joke.
I also was just like, all those like great headlines Andrea was talking about improvements and like quality of life.
Robots?
Right. And I was like, yeah, that's not going anywhere near the cater industry.
The catering industry.
Sorry.
No. You're going to be driving to Palm Springs at 4 a.m. to set up a wedding for 400 people and half the staff isn't going to show up.
Yeah, that guy's like siphoning the air conditioning in the kitchen and like putting it into like his trailer outside. Like,
oh my God. So like nightmares, that's really interesting. You know, disruptive sleep is the thing I wish upon nobody, but I have heard that people have had a lot of success with aventurines, specifically the greens, not the reds. I've also heard people having success, and that's a really easy stone to get a hold of. It's not very expensive either. Lepidolite, I'm a big fan of, because it actually has, you know, the chemical structure is lithium based. So holding that is said to imbue the properties of lithium. And another thing I would say is pick something that makes you feel at peace. You know, I'm really a big fan of looking at crystals like art. And so if you have this sort of active piece of art where a man is like hurtling an arrow through the air and you're waking up every morning and looking at that, you probably don't want that over your bed or right in front of you. You probably want something that imbues, unless that makes you feel calm. And if that makes you feel calm, then, you know, you can unpack that in psychotherapy later. I just love it when people hurdle arrows through the air.
You just made me take pause for a moment. I just inherited a beautiful triptych piece of artwork that I was like, oh, this will look good in the bedroom. But it is like
what's happening in the picture.
There's a lot going on. There are men running, chasing bulls.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so, okay, that shouldn't go over the bed maybe.
Right. Cause I mean, that's sort of the feng shui perspective too. It's just very activating. Like put it in a place where you want to be activated. I mean, maybe there are times when you want to be activated.
Put it in the bathroom, Brooke.
Over the toilet, Van Poplin.
But yeah, I keep something in your room or your personal space that makes you feel sweet and calm and imbues that sense of quiet for you.
Okay, you're totally, yeah. Okay, cool.
I love it. And anybody looking to, you know, find you and crystals they're attracted to or that they have feelings for, like they can find you at Hippie QVC on the old Instagram. And how often are you doing the live auctions these days?
They happen twice a week. So they happen on Sunday mornings around 11 a.m. and they happen on Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. And it's really easy. Anyone can join. It's a very easy, painless way to shop. And the community is super cool as well. So if you're like nervous about like logging onto a live, like who is this lady and like talking to me, I promise it's always fun. It's like an interactive podcast where you're shopping. It's QVC.
I mean, I will say as someone who has joined in, I would, like Heather said early in the story, trust your gut. If you want that crystal, you better say that's mine or someone's going to take it real quick. You know?
Yeah. And I always try to, you know, if you lose out on something that you really had your heart set on, I always try to search for people. You know, I go to gem shows all over the world at this point. And it's a real pleasure to be able to discover things that are so unique and so special and so, and bring so much joy to people's houses. That to me is like,
amazing.
I landed where I needed to land. I was like, oh, catering, acting? No. Tarot? No. Huh. Sitting, doing Instagram sales, being in my sweatpants. Nice.
I love it. Well, it was a pleasure for you to be on the show today. We are so happy you were able to join us. And, you know, for me to get, you know, deeper on a level like this warms my heart like entirely. Yeah. Brooke, should we wrap her up?
We should. I mean, other than saying, I feel like we've all been friends for 150 episodes already. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sita, so much joining us. By the way, I gave that shit a follow. You'll be hearing from me. We'll meet in real life. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. You know, and I want to say one more thing about being kismet is that like you leading in and like being so open about your sobriety is a topic we're actually going to tackle on our next episode or two. So you're leading into it with grace, like, you know, paving a path for us to talk more in depth about it. So, wow.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say wow.
And just know that like it's possible because let me tell you, it was a strong pull towards not being sober. So it's, you know, it's great because sometimes in this industry, the service industry, it's really hard to see what's going on amid so much of it. So.
Yeah. And it's funny. We touched on it just barely when we were still pretty young. And I think we've attracted a lot more listeners. We've been through a pandemic at this point. There's so much going on. We're entering the holidays, which are historically hard for people and substance issues. And so I think we're going to land right smack dab at the right time with a little, you know, talk about sobriety soon.
I can't
wait
to listen.
Thank you so much for priming absolutely. The pump.
You guys, Hippie QVC, get over there, do all your holiday shopping for yourself. Other than that, you guys, those server submitted stories, of course, we love to hear them. Send them our way, sideworkpod@gmail.com. And Brooke, you know what we say at the end of every episode, especially the 150th episode.
Oh, my God. Godspeed and good podcasting.
Godspeed and good feels, guys.
We'll talk to you next week.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.